Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our normal Thursday stream. I do understand we're streaming against a few different people, but we will make this one work. I am joined by our regular guest, Evelyn.
Yes,
Evelyn's here.
it is not Starman in the Zoomer this evening.
No, it is not, because we also have Trig. Trig's back from his long sabbatical in the real world.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Did you touch grass? What were the textures like?
You know what? The resolution is incredible out there. That's all I'm saying.
Damn, as long as you didn't fry your graphics card.
No, I've yeah, sadly, going outside, as I was saying to you guys, I've been mostly nose in books, studying being the studious thing. Even though I am a massive boomer, I have been upskilling and learning new stuff. In fact, just
Upskilling.
re
Old
rehashing old
dogs
stuff.
can indeed learn new tricks, as it were.
Old dog, new trick, all that
Indeed.
good stuff, yeah.
Old trick, new dog, trick, dog, trick, tricked.
Yes.
Well,
Anyway,
get
thanks.
skills, get money.
Yeah, I suppose I'll do the routine thanking of people for showing up for the streams as people feed in, and thank you to the members and whoever, and for those very generous people that help us with the Streamlabs and Super Chats and whatever else. It
Yes,
is greatly
yes.
appreciated, and it gives us an extra driver to kind of do these streams, I suppose.
Yes, we do. It does help having the beer money. I do need to send you the beer money for May still.
Yeah.
I do have that. It's about 120 quid spending money, between the two, which is good. So that'll be going towards your successful Mies Institute fundraiser thing.
Yeah, I
Again, that.
learned the other day that for the whole week it is business casual, so that just got a whole lot more expensive. But
Oh no,
it will
business
work.
casual.
We'll
Not
make it.
business casual.
No,
Anything
no.
but business casual. Is that like a 90s suit? Like the
Oh,
really horrible
no.
loose 90s suits.
Well, no, I think they mean more just like no jeans, no trainers, no
No.
shorts.
I know what you mean.
But they
Like
see, the thing is, from what I have heard though, that bit of Alabama basically gets to near 100 degrees Fahrenheit and is ridiculously humid, so you would want to wear summer clothes. But the institute itself has such great air conditioning, obviously because of the amazing patrons it has that give it large amounts of money. So they have the best of the best air conditioning, and it's like 59 degrees Fahrenheit in the bloody, lecture hall. It'll be frozen.
is it going to be loose fitting Clinton-esque pantsuits for
Oh
you
no.
then?
No, I can't do the pantsuit. That's a
You getting like the
disgrace.
power shoulders and all sorts?
Oh no, that's Theresa May. We're like our weird chef dresses are
Yeah.
displaying power and whatnot.
But we're not talking about fashion today, unfortunately. Although we
Merkel
could do
power
this.
pantsuits.
No, we don't want the Merkel power pantsuits.
Pantsuit in
Uh, we're
chief.
we're talking about a topic that we've wanted to talk about for a while, but has actually come into somewhat of the zeitgeist in our circle. Thankfully, actually, I'm glad people are paying
Yes.
attention to this, because it is very, very, very important, and it is being largely suppressed in terms of mainstream news. The normal headline barkers, as I call them, aren't really picking up on this. They're very much distracted by all the rainbows. But we aren't tilting at them.
No.
We aren't tilting at them this week, and we probably won't be tilting at them throughout this accursed month of bad takes in all quarters.
We may be
Today
talking
we'll
about tilting at him, but that's a different story.
we might be, but that'll be us admonishing it. It's different when we do it, okay, guys? We're going to be talking about the web of what has been referred to as woke capital, but what really is at the moment green capital
Well, I
and
think
being
this is
pushed as.
it's maybe a different way to look at the same structure, and it kind of shows that, like, it's not just about one aspect of it. It is a totalizing sort of phenomena we are experiencing now with a as the attempt to take society to a sort of higher level of managerialism and ultimately sort of a global technocracy, if you wish to call it that. And
Yes.
that is the solution for all problems. And I think that's something we might want to get into again with some other stuff we'll talk about. And I think it's something we really need to focus on is how many different political factions argue from different positions, but all provide solutions that essentially point to the World Economic Forum, to, you know, as we're going to get into here, the ESG scores and all these different things are all tied into, you know, not just the zeitgeist itself, but every single little bit of the zeitgeist.
Trig, as well, you will have noticed some of this even, you know, in your career in a large company, let's say, because I have encountered this waffle starting when I did a couple of business units, and there was some maybe some token stuff about social responsibility and environmental responsibility, but they were very much tacked on. They're very much boilerplate and nobody really paid attention to them. But again, even in my line of work, being in private industry, I've noticed this nibbling at the edges in the real world. It's one of the few things, you know, you don't really notice if you go out and about a lot of like the drag queen story time. It doesn't affect your daily life. But the environmental disclosure stuff and more of this being demanded for large scale projects is something I've encountered in an ever increasing fashion in a very noticeable way.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the classic. I mean, you know, I was involved in some fairly heavy engineering, and it was always, we demand more power, better fuel economy, you know, less emissions, less, more, and drive towards, can you by any chance make jet engines out of, you know, out of electricity?
Facilitating Faustian man there.
Yeah,
the electric planes by like 2035 thing is so funny, because no one in that has like ever looked at, you know, thermodynamics.
No one, the aerospace industry, they've looked at it, they've gone, yeah, sure, no problem, we can make you an electric jet engine, here you go, here's an electric jet engine, and they go, that's fantastic, we'll be flying around the world in it, and they're going, no you won't, it's got about half an hour in it, and you can put about 5 people in it instead of, you know, 100. They're never going to get over the fact that fuel, as you know, hydrocarbon fuel, actually, as you burn it, believe it or not, gets lighter. You get less fuel, and you have to carry less weight, etc. With batteries, you're carrying is just as much weight at the end of the flight as you are at the beginning. Look. Therefore, you're just never going to get to the same level of power.
Don't teach the retards thermodynamics, Trig. You'll short circuit them.
Yeah.
So, it's the whole temperature flow down to a cold sink thing. They don't understand that. But no, it's all of that stuff. You notice it. It's very much something that's going to affect your everyday life in a very real way very soon. And to a moderate to kind of medium degree already is affecting your everyday life.
Well, I think this is part of... I mean, this is... I think both me and you essentially said this to someone on Telegram when they were asking about things like the World Economic Forum, as I've got an article up just now, and we're going to go through some of this stuff. But I think part of the reason why we are being shown this stuff, we are being told that we have these articles that are meant to be sort of, not necessarily like PR operations, because they don't really seem like PR operations, but they are a way that they communicate to the lower level managers and people in society who need to be on this stuff and need to talk about it to make it successful. Your people who are in HR organizations who have spent 20 years talking about like creating a good corporate culture and being environmentally social and part of a responsible community. And what's happened is, obviously, you know, since the 70s, possibly even earlier, you've had all these different incremental ways that different legislation has come in regards to how your business operates, how it handles materials, how it deals with waste on site, how it deals with its staff, HR, you know, a never-ending list. And what has essentially happened is that something like the World Economic Forum has taken all these different bits, formalized it into, you know, a value form or something that you can check and measure against. And that is what we see here now is things like ESG scores, which is largely framed as, you know, an environmentally responsible thing. But as we'll see, as we look through just even this first article here, it's not just about environmentalism.
No.
Because environmental...
ESG scores, as being as they are not framed in a lot of this around the environment. If you look at how they are sold, that's a large part of how they're derived, but this is actually framed as a risk management maneuver.
Not just that.
It's kind of a genius pivot.
Mm. Well, I mean, if we look at this article from AGS Banga, executive chairman at MasterCard. MasterCard will come back to at some point.
Oh yeah, executive chairman. This isn't some NGO Quango nobody.
But it's this. You know, the language is all incredibly both managerial and therapeutic. You know, decency can help a business define their role in society and make stakeholder capitalism a reality. What is decency in regards to business? Yeah. Who says what that is?
Who decides what decency is?
Inclusivity includes a diversity of thought among employees and partners. Oh, we're back with diversity of thought now, are we? It's 2016 all over again. For capitalism to benefit all stakeholders, companies must continue to innovate. Businesses must not...
It says nothing.
Yeah, it must work to earn stakeholders' trust. Yeah, I know you got the trust part of it there.
The big thing is, who are these stakeholders?
Hmm.
And the idea of stakeholder capitalism, in quotes, is never fully defined in this. They never go... If you look at the intro to this, it's all waffle. If it's possible for the economic engine that works for all stakeholders, governments first of all, people, business, and the how is the planet in an abstract fashion a business stakeholder? Really what it's saying is governments, then people as represented by the governments, and businesses as dictated to by the governments. What it's really saying is that governments and states are going to have a larger role in business by essentially lopping off huge parts of the control of how business is done. Oops. And bringing it into their remit.
And I mean, I hate to say it, this is kind of Mussolini's dream of governments and big business going hand in hand.
There's a nice bit from, you know, at MasterCard, decency underpins our sustainability as a company because it helps us see as clearly doing the right thing for society leads to the right outcomes for our business. There you go. There's your Mussolini bit. You know, do the right thing for society, and your business will profit.
Uh huh.
And with that, it becomes easier to define our role in society. Hot bus. So because you do the right thing, your business works, and that makes you more society than less society. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And make stakeholder capitalism a reality. We use our network and technology to drive financial inclusion, digital empowerment, ultimately inclusive growth, because decency is our guide.
All of this, though. Yeah.
Oh, that is your data is ours now. You earn nothing.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, if you go over this again, as I was saying, a lot of this is geared towards risk management.
Yeah,
if you look
the,
at
the trust section here.
The trust section. Sorry, go on, Drake.
I was going to say, it always is. I mean, the thing is, I've seen some really interesting stuff come out very recently that is, you know, wonderfully green tech and also really, really cool. The idea of using beta source nuclear waste, wrapping it up essentially as an artificial diamond, slapping a layer of graphene on it and calling it a battery that will run for 27,000. It's not an actual battery as we know it, but it is a constant trickle source of electricity from beta source, which is basically electrons. And yeah, you're not going to run your car off it, but it might charge your car overnight, kind of thing. These sorts of technology, very, very cool. But alongside them, it is, you know, we're only going to allow the right organizations to have the hands on this because it is a radioactive material. And anyone that's going to have to use it or wants to use it is going to sell their data to get it.
The thing about data selling, the first line under this trust section, the key to all of this is trust. It has to be at the centre of what we do and how we work. We have to earn trust every day with every single transaction, solution, tool, and initiative. And trust is this basically therapeutic sort of like horrible schizophrenic concept of like, well, you know, we can't trust you unless you don't give us all your data. Don't mind trusting us, though, because there's no one else to trust. So it's not trust. Oh, yeah, you've got no choice.
They talk about EMV technology. They're talking really about kind of e-commerce stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, contactless payments, basically. Mm. But they go on to say QR-based payments, and tokens.
Mm.
The crypto's in here already.
Yeah.
We are also working to ensure blah blah blah. No person or link chain is exposed because they don't have the resources to keep the whole system. They're selling again the social credit score stuff as security and risk management, but also as you know, the PR arm of it is we're going to save the planet with this.
Look, they've got their wee MasterCard graphic here, and it's just like, you know, companies must have best-in-class security and privacy practices, transparency control, accountability, but then social impact. Companies should use their information to identify needs and opportunities to make a positive impact in society. How can the people who require a positive impact in society consent to that? You know, where is this notion of trust when MasterCard just takes all your data and decides to rework your, you know, energy credits or your DWP payments or whatever?
To use one of their terms, it's open book accounting, but it's only one way. They want to see they want your books open, but you're never going to look into their books. You're never going to see what they're doing because that's all protected algorithms and all that's data protection. We can't sell that because someone might steal it.
This is from 2020 when it was really just a hypothetical proposal.
Yeah.
The next one we see here.
It's the audit board one I've got up. UK's new ESG law, what you need to know. This is pretty recent, one.
Well, there's the World Economic Forum one as well that's the second link in there.
I'll get that one up then.
Yeah, stakeholder capitalism. Over 70 companies implement the ESG reporting metrics. And we can get into, I think this is a good introduction to what ESGs are. It's the second one in the document.
Yeah, no, I've opened it up, but the all I have is this little bit of text here.
That's bizarre here. I'll put it in the chat because it's on my screen here. Are they just deleting this in real time?
Very possibly. That happened with some of the stuff I had up before at one point.
No, this is Economic Forum. God, it's gone. Yeah, that's just gone. They've just broken that bit of their site. While we've been looking at it, Hypernova rendered token zero. Thank you, webmaster at World Economic Forum. You have broken your website.
Well, now, why would people who want to run the world have a dodgy website that doesn't work?
Let me actually get you an archive of
archive.
This.
Yeah,
because luckily I have archive everywhere. Yes. Very good tool, guys. I just search archive everywhere.
We will make sure to replace some of the broken links with archive links, because have you put the notes up as a community post?
The notes up, there is a community post if you guys want to read along with this. There's a community post which are the notes for the stream. So if you go to the community tab, you'll be able to get up the notes for the stream. So yes, you know, we will not eat the bug, we will not drink the corn syrup,
right? There
but
we go. Yeah,
we sure will have capitalism. The
thing is, that one said before over 70, this is only over 50, so this must be an earlier version of the article here. I'll make sure this is showing right on OBS.
This now says, I wouldn't adjust it too much for that. This now says 70 rather than 50, but the live version of
it's
is
non- some size of companies though. KPMG, you know, all these massive, you know, fintech and like chemical companies, manufacturers. Why would these massive companies want to sign up to a regulatory framework that might be difficult for their competitors to take hold of?
Well, as we're seeing with this, this is from, I think it was updated in 2022, but this article itself, I think, is, published September 21st, 2021. So this is a year old. We see the trajectory here that they proposed it. They've got voluntary sign-ups from very large organizations.
Well, I was going to say, there's a further bit down here. Since January 2021, more than 120 companies have shown their support for stakeholder capitalism and ESG reporting. Companies which have adopted this approach include Accenture, Bank of America, Eni, Fidelity International, HSBC Holdings, IBM, MasterCard, Nestle, PayPal, Royal DSM, Salesforce, Schneider Electric, Siemens, Total, UBS, Unilever, Yara International, and Zurich Insurance Group. So basically about, I don't know, about the third of the world's international capital.
It's gone up by about 50% from this. So basically most of the kind of the Bilderberg partners and the top level.
Well, that's
what
they're saying. You know, lastly, they are contributing to their communities with nearly $140 trillion paid in taxes alone.
Mm. For those confused,
he looks terrible there, doesn't he, old Schwab?
He does look really bad. ESG is a term that just stands for environmental, social, and corporate governance, which is the boilerplate way of saying that instead of just reporting financial metrics, instead of reporting your financial performance for your shareholders, you must now, and it is a must as we'll get on to, report your environmental factors as defined by the government, your social impact, and your corporate governance, which is new speak for the fact that your HR department, which now must now essentially inform on you, not just the government, but in public, on your diversity metrics and on
the UN sustainable goals as like part of the thumbnail or the wee different bits of it, because what this is essentially the integration of the UN sustainable goals into like a global fascist capital takeover.
Yes. you are right there, Trigger. It is very much the state's capital wet dream of the managerial fascists.
Yeah, Jeff's accountant, you know, down the road is not going to be able to sign up to this. He's not going to be able to do this.
No.
But he's going to be forced into compliance, which means he ends up selling out and becoming part of this as well. It is very, very corporatist fascism.
And
the little guy need not apply. In fact, the little guy may as well just sell his business.
Well, I don't know if we want to go for the Financial Times one or the
UK and UA ESG law.
Because obviously, when these things are no longer optional, what they do is they just write them into law.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the two that we're gonna I think we should go over the UK law one first, then we'll go on to the. Well, there's loads of them here. There's the...
I was just going to go for the Big Four accountant one, because I know there's a lot of really good stuff in that.
Okay, so we'll not do the Delatech one, we'll not do the Goldman Sachs one then.
We could quickly
touch on them.
Yeah, we kind of... If you want, I can grab those. Will we go over this one?
Yeah. I'll just go over this one then. Okay, we've seen the pipeline here. 2020, the World Economic Forum is talking about this as a hypothetical, as a wet dream, as where they would like things to go. 2021, we see that on a voluntary basis, some of the world's largest companies that are part of the World Economic Forum, part of, you know, things like Bilderberg, who are the leaders of this managerial corporate globalism, have signed up for this because they are the ones who really are pushing for it. It's a two-way framework between governments and large businesses. They both want this. What we see now, this is from March 2022 this year, this is a law that's been proposed for a little while, but it does seem to be being fast-tracked very quickly through the UK legislature. Mm-hmm. So yeah, UK's new ESG law, what you need to know. With businesses turn their attention, the thing is, it's always framed as being business-led.
Yes.
It's always being framed as this is already happening, therefore we're codifying it.
Well, yeah, it's like a higher level of the fact that, like, well, people want gay marriage, so we'll let them vote on it. You know, it's you know, businesses want this. Well, no, it's the fact that businesses have been told for decades now that if they don't believe in these things, they won't succeed. So,
well, it's very few businesses really over the last decade have taken part in this. It's accelerated, as we've seen over the last couple of years. But what we've seen is it's mostly large companies with a very large globalist interest who have been pushing for this. And now you're just being forced. It's just being signed into law. So, what does the UK ESG regulatory requirement impact? The UK has passed not one, but two new laws that together will cover all UK registered companies and limited liability partnerships with over 500 employees having annual revenue of more than 500 million. It's the thin end of the wedge. They're saying, look, it's fine, guys. It's only going to apply to big corporations for now. We always know these things trickle down. And it might be that you have to partner with one of these large corporations in order to get your ESG reports out there.
Well,
also, in the way it's being framed, if you look at this as being framed as risk management, and companies with ESG reports will be the only companies that you will be allowed to invest in.
Yeah.
Because all other companies will be classed as like junk bonds.
I was going to say, yeah, you've got to think about it not in the terms of the private investor sticking £1,000 here and there. You know, for when it comes to the bigger sort of financial fiduciary media markets, and you start talking about pensions and unfunded liabilities, you know, the really, really big bubbles and the big balloons, a lot of them are based on, you know, algorithmic, as you're saying, risk-based investment. And if one of the tick factors for risk is your ESG score not being high, then you aren't going to be, especially even if you're one of these businesses that's making over, you know, £500 million a year, it's still probably vitally important to you that you get, you know, some Barclays pension fund giving you £1 million a year and some sort of equity deal, or, you know, whatever you're dealing with. And if all of a sudden that doesn't happen because you can't afford to, I don't know, cut your emissions down or employ as many people as required through diversity and inclusion statements, you'll not get anywhere.
The crazy thing is, they will have a department that will just sit there offsetting.
Well, yes.
The large companies will just go, oh yeah, I've employed 5-10 people.
Your HR organization just get 3 times bigger.
Yeah, and they will just sit there offsetting and going, oh yes, we can't comply to that this year, but we promise we'll comply to it within 5 years. Is that okay? And someone will sign off on it. I mean, they get the right signatures and they carry on as normal.
Someone's probably already done it, but I can tell you there's going to be a handful of people over the next decade that will become billionaires by developing ESG like optimization programs. You know, just taking like something like as you work on Sigma 6 and just changing the parameters to fit this ESG framework. This is probably something we should shut up about and knock together ourselves and go off and make a silly amount of money.
I'm already there. I'm right there.
Someone's going to make Sage for ESG and become an actual trillionaire.
But the
language here is the legislation adds environmental reporting to all UK public interest entities. And what they're saying is that now any company with over 500 employees and an annual revenue of more than 500 million is now a public interest entity and must produce non-financial information statements. These are basically financial struggle sessions in which a company must justify to the government and to the reserve banks that they are part of the regime.
Well, yeah, here we go.
And if they are not part of the regime, and these are ever shifting.
Obviously, we've already got to be here. As with other reporting requirements, assurance teams help companies validate that reported environmental risk information is accurate, supported, and reported on time. Oh boy, new jobs worth just dropped. The unique nature of environmental risk, or the unique nature of it, so it needs to be a specialised industry then. Thanks for telling us that, which means you'll need a degree for it, or probably a master's. Various organisations is the primary factor inducing complication within the ESG realm. While the regulations provide a framework for building the reporting structure, the contents will fluctuate depending on each company's commitments, KPIs, and level of investment. Further, as investment communities continue to roll out proprietary ESG scoring frameworks, S&P Global Corporate Sustainability Assessment, Bloomberg ESG scoring, etc., assurance teams' ability to quickly provide accurate data to the evaluators becomes increasingly important. So we've just got a whole, you know, is this now even something that could burgeon off into becoming a whole new realm of, like, speculation? You know, are we going to bet on not what the company's value is, but what its ESG score is? Irrespective of the value, its profitability, or anything like that.
Yes, actually, yes. What's going to happen is you're going to have companies that are not profitable, but they have a high ESG score. Therefore, investing in them lowers your like carbon risk quotient, and your fund will be seen as more sustainable, and therefore gets a higher credit rating.
Here's the kicker: they're going to need a system to record and track all ESG initiatives and claims. I wonder who's going to sell them that. Evidence collection, selecting the appropriate framework to map against. I wonder who will supply that material. Consolidate results for ESG reporting. And then I love this line down here, planning for compliance. Yeah, or basically aka lubing yourself for the process.
Yes. Well, we're not there yet in terms of the sources and articles, but bear in mind that these ESG scores will be generated by verified third parties, and the third parties will universally go further than the legislation requires.
I've just noticed I've clicked on the Financial Times link here just so we can start getting through some of them.
I'm segueing into it. Yes,
they have a heading here. They have a whole section for ESG investing. We're already there. it's so funny that, like, you know, I actually, when I was going through that Canteon in the Class War article that I'd originally pitched to the Mallard and re-put on the Substack earlier this week. For those who haven't seen it, I'm sure someone can drop a link in the chat for me. But that mentioned ESG scores in one of the BlackRock statements. However, beforehand, I'd never heard of that. And all of a sudden, you know, we get to this point, we look retrospectively over the last 18 months, and it turns out, all of a sudden, they've developed all these ESG score things, and even Financial Times has a section on their website for it. Like, where, you know, how can you, if you want to get into this idea that these things come out emergently, so emergently, we just developed all these things in the matter of 18 months. Heavily doubt that.
It's, again, what we are seeing here is a PR put forward perception of bottom-up change where the investor is demanding greener investments.
Mm.
And what we're seeing really is top-down change. We've seen governments, we've seen supranational organizations go first, then it filters down to governments, and in between that you have the adoption by large multinationals that really are inseparable from either the government that has remit over them or the supranational organization that they claim loyalty to.
Don't you know that PwC, KPMG, EY, and Deloitte, or however you pronounce it, are grassroots organizations? I mean, they only manage some 32 trillion in funds, but they're very grassroots.
Well, this is extraordinary, because the FT article here, it even says so. It's like Big Four, the leaders of the Big Four accounting firms have come together in an unusual joint initiative to unveil a reporting framework for environmental, social, and governance standards. The move, spearheaded by the International Business Council, run by Brian Moynihan, chief executive of Bank of America. Bank of America, by the way, was voted...
How close is International Business Council to International Banking Cartel?
International something council, yeah. we'll leave that one there. It's the chief executive of Bank of America, the most evil company in the world. It is. Aims to encourage the 130-odd large global companies in the IBC to adopt the standards for their 2021 account. So now we've seen the carrot.
If the initiative is successful, it would mark the first truly coordinated approach to ESG reporting. It's so emergent, it has to be coordinated. And could prompt investors to move more money into the sector, which is currently thought to be total about under 32 billion in the broadest definition of ESG.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, sorry, 32 trillion. It could prompt investors to move more money. Well, no, what you actually mean there is that investors will not have a choice because they would lose their money elsewhere.
Well, they won't have a choice because all the big accounting firms say you have to have these reports. All the members of the International Business Council say you have to have the reports. Mm. All the large banks say you have to have these reports. It says right now there's an alphabet soup of metrics. Punit Rajen, Delatet chief executive, we'll get into them later, told the Financial Times. Because aren't they the ones who've been pushing the MasterCard version of this?
Yes, they are part of the same. They are a Finnish fintech company that pushes.
Here's the line.
Something we'll get to in a bit.
Here's the line, though. It is important for us to have a common set of standards, i.e. non-emergent, if there is to be widespread adoption and that will lead to change in behavior. So it's not a behavior on the ground level that they're adapting to. It is a top-down initiative to socially engineer the financial sector.
Yeah, there you remains, go. Yeah. Yeah. The drive to create a common accounting framework has been sparked by rising frustration among investment groups over the plethora of competing systems for measuring sustainability. Really? You got a source for that?
Trig, are you reading along with this? Because I want you to read this next paragraph for us, because it's amazing.
In addition,
hold on, where am I? Yeah, I am.
Where it says financiers.
Oh, no, we've missed a bit, though. Can I do one line before that quickly?
Okay.
In addition to metrics linked to the so-called Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, spearheaded by Mark Carney, former governor of the Bank of England, there have been metrics created by the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board and the Global Reporting Initiative.
Oh, no. Just read that bit where it says finances, right?
But the financiers, such as Mr. Moynihan and Larry Fink, chief executive of BlackRock. BlackRock have lost a ton recently. Have been pushing for a common framework for several years, hitherto without much success. A key complication is that practices vary in different regions, and authorities, such as the European Commission, are pressing ahead with separate initiatives.
Basically, they're saying, hey, we're supposed to build a global panopticon, you dummies.
Not just a European one, come on.
It's just that, like, you've got the head of Bank of America and the head of BlackRock being two of the most public faces of pushing this initiative, and it's supposed to be about, it's supposed to be public good, if you know what I mean. It's supposed to be, we do good thing, we good corporation, we opposite of evil, and it's Bank of America and fucking BlackRock out there who are spearheading it. Again, the two most evil corporations in the world. Yeah, BlackRock have been losing money, but my theory is that BlackRock now owns so much property at a loss that they're going to be bailed out at some point.
It'll get funneled into the next organization in the chain. Actually, this is quite funny. What was it the guy Dank was talking about the other day in one of his Mad Lads thing? I ended up listening to it. I was cooking with a guy run this thing called something Capital, and it was essentially an organization that bought out bankrupt organizations and moved from one to the other continuously in a chain, so that on paper it was worth billions, but actually it was just made out of the defunct, you know, paperwork of old, you know, bankrupt businesses that are lending to themselves in a near infinite chain. That's basically what big BlackRock and stuff like that are in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah. They are fuckers for this. They shift money around so quickly and so opaquely that it's impossible to tell. And they just go, oh yeah, we've got billions. Look, big number. And people go, oh, here's maths. And people go, oh my god, lots of numbers. And then they just take the word for it. Then every 12 or so years, people go, oh shit, it's all falling apart.
I've just read a word in this. The GS Sustain team believes, this is the Goldman Sachs one we're on now. The GS Sustain team believes that 2022 will be a watershed year for ESG-related capital market regulation in the US. Well, they just believe that, do they? They don't happen to know anything that makes them believe that. they just believe it.
The best way to project the future is to control it.
Yeah.
Is to I believe that's from the X-Files, but well, we've got here Goldman Sachs. We've got here Simmons and Simmons, one of the world's largest corporate law firms. We've got Deloitte, which is a similar name to, I've got those mixed up actually. The Deloitte thing is basically a giant administration firm. Based in the UK.
Not to interrupt you, there's someone's asking in chat, you guys get any opinions on John Galbraith? I'm sure you're talking about John Kenneth Galbraith there. Just go read all the stuff Sam Francis talks to him about, because Galbraith is this guy saying here that, you know, always makes the complaint that the government isn't evolved enough in the economy, and that's why he tried to respond to Burnham about managerialism and how it's a good thing. But different conversation, sorry, I'll let you go on.
Oh, that's fine. No, I'm just saying that Goldman Sachs, Simmons & Simmons, you've got the big four accountancy firms, you've got all the, you know, the 70 biggest companies in the world, you've got all these, this is not being led.
These statistics are different to the ones mentioned on that article we read before. Public interest entities, a public interest entity is large if it has more than 500 employees and it has a balance sheet of more than 20 million or a net turnover of more than 40 million. That's a lot different from the half a billion threshold we looked at.
It comes down every time.
Yeah.
It will continue to. Yeah.
It is a limbo poll. Originally, it was set up as turnover of 2 billion. I read an article from 2016, I think, where it said 2 billion. The bars come down very heavily from 2 billion to 40 million. So
it is just one more monopoly maker. These regulations always are.
Well, the issue is that any company whose turnover is over 40 million essentially becomes a public entity. It becomes not just implicitly but explicitly an arm of the government, because it must create these detailed reports that lead its you know, corporate governance and all that.
How ESG is changing business, moving markets, and driving regulation.
Yeah. That doesn't say anything new, but that's the large consulting firm.
It was just the the title itself, really. we've got both the... There is the other ads, Goldman Sachs one, Simmons one. Is there any left?
No, they all. A lot of them say the same things. But to round this segment out, what we have is an international framework of non-financial reporting. That's what ESG is. If you ever see the word ESG, what it means is it is a report to investors, a public report that is government now government mandated on a global scale that shows not financial information, but it shows environmental information, social information. Mm-hmm. It's basically the regime card of a company. It is what a company must produce to show its compliance and, with regime schemes.
And that compliance requires tools that mean essentially consumers are being monitored.
Have you not got the legal stuff on here that we got?
I was going to get up the Doconomy link. I didn't put all the links in here because we've got 7 for that section already. And I thought we had enough.
A really important one I think has been missed out here, but I'll go grab it in a sec.
Which one is this?
It's like the Harvard Law Review one or whatever it's called.
Cool, I can grab that. Harvard Law Forum, Law School Forum on Corporate Governance.
I think so, yeah. There's another one as well, but so I'm just trying to make sure we've got certain streams. I all the links are mixed up. That's why it's having
all Zoom the links up. Are just in the links section, I believe.
Sorry, there's just one. I didn't want to read that yet, but that's one of the ones we'll need to talk about at some point because it is so important. But yeah, it's the corporatelaw.harvard. Because this basically basically it's Harvard Law School going, what? Excuse me. We'll get onto how extraordinary ESGs are when we talk about that one. But just keep in mind that's what they are. That's what they do. They are non-financial reporting, government mandated non-financial reporting on your activities. It's like I said. It's
the buddy David Katz work sessions. On this. I reckon that.
Yes.
I recognize that name.
Yes,
so what's the juicy stuff in here then?
Well, I wanted to get this one up a bit later.
Fair enough. Then I don't know what.
I wanted to talk about when we get to near the end. Okay. We can talk about it now though. It's I'm not sure where exactly it fits, but it's very very vital to what we're talking about because it does have this stuff in it about them going like, what is this? Give me a sec. I've actually lost the link myself right now.
Here it is.
Yeah, I've got it. It just wasn't loading. It says the U.S. Treasury. It's about the SEC regulation. Because you've also missed out the bits where it says that the SEC stuff is coming.
That was the Goldman Sachs one that was talking about SEC.
Yes. We kind of skimmed over that one. But the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission in the US, is also drafting legislation for ESGs. And it's actually more stringent than the UK's is. It will require not just environmental reporting, as the UK's does, with a few add-ons. It does require, like, diversity reporting.
Well, offering guidance on human capital disclosure to meet the importance of specific metrics like workforce diversity and considering more specific guidance or rulemaking on board diversity.
Yes.
This is just going to drive a lot of companies to work out of Honduras.
Acting Chair Lee appointed also Satcham Khanna as a senior policy advisor for climate and ESG to oversee and coordinate the SEC's efforts. Having a dedicated advisor on these issues will allow us to look broadly at how they intersect with our regulatory framework across our offices and divisions. Ugh.
Yeah. Basically, it's presenting an open question here. It says, should the SEC maintain its traditional focus on requiring issuer reporting on financial material information? They've got a typo here. And if not, should there be a safe harbor for any financially immaterial information that ultimately may be requested? As a trusted regulator, the SEC is a position for robust investor and issuer engagement, blah, 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 issue regulation. But what it talks about here is it says, as we noted in an earlier article, there is a key distinction drawn between important information and material information. The SEC disclosure framework was designed to require reporting of information that was financially material to investors, not information that may be important on a societal level. Professor Ann Lipton of Tulane University has observed that in the United States, corporate transparency is a function of the needs of the investing class. Even if the public demands information about the firm's environmental impact, the treatment of the workers, their political activity, and their customer data, corporations are under no obligation to provide it absent a showing of relevance to an investor audience. So they're using the justification of le public good, but even then they're saying, look, like, these are private companies that aren't controlled by the general public. Mm. Their fiduciary and a contractual level obligation is to their investors, not to society at large. And that is what the SEC was founded to oversee. The SEC has a long-standing reputation. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'm skipping bits here, sorry. Broad requirements for ESG reporting could be viewed as an attempt to shoehorn disclosures that may be relevant to society and stakeholders, but are financially immaterial to investors, into a system that was historically built for that narrow focus investors. It's unclear how the ESG related information is financially material in the conventional sense, meaning that broad ESG disclosure requirements risk being seen as a policy making rather than content neutral regulation. This carries significant risk for both the SEC and market participants. So even like Harvard Law School, who's adding all these fig leaves about public good and public interest, are saying that the SEC was never designed for this. It was never designed to be the corporate culture politburo.
I was going to say, it wasn't designed to run a corporate social credit system.
Yeah, which, as this is, the SEC has a long-standing reputation as a fair and neutral regulator. This is fundamental to the successful execution of its tripartite mission to protect investors, maintain fair, orderly, and efficient markets, and facilitate capital formation. And key to the legitimacy of its actions. Procedurally, it stays close to its mandate by acting incrementally through the rulemaking process. And they basically go on to just say the fact that ESGs are completely foreign to this and a very complex thing to do that we'll need to create, as other things have talked about, an entire industry around them, where this fundamentally revolutionizes the role of SEC in American policy, where it goes from a slightly boring department of government that really just oversees the financial disclosure information to shareholders of corporations, to this massive entity that oversees their obligation to society and makes them disclose ever more information. Because ESGs can mean anything. You see how deliberately general they are. So this is what like Harvard Law is saying. In the background, the kind of elites within their own internal debates are acknowledging the fact that this is a massive power grab by these financial institutions, in the same way that in America, you had the rent moratorium by medical rent moratorium, which doesn't make any sense.
I'm going to a bit slightly further down. Similarly, Commissioner Elad Roisman recently observed that some proponents of this agency's intervention sometimes offer rationales for action that are entirely outside the realm of securities law. A letter recently arrived in my office advocating for mandatory ESG disclosures and ended by saying there is no planet B. The question for now is whether policy goals that may be considered important to society are beyond the SEC's current mandate absent legislative action, or whether such initiatives would be a natural progression consistent with recent developments in the prevailing view of corporate purpose.
Whether
they wish to preserve or expand it, both traditionalists and progressives agree that the existing disclosure framework was designed for a specific purpose and its current form is ill-suited to the informational needs of the stakeholders and society at large.
There we go, stakeholders and society at large. But that is again, recognizing the massive remit increase. And they're sneaking something in there by saying that, yes, this is being done without new legislation in the US. This is being done wholly through agency reform. I don't know, Trey, what do you think about all this?
Well, the SEC have been making some interesting power grabs of late anyway. I could wax lyrical about how they have dived into the crypto market quite aggressively, but leaving out Ethereum and Bitcoin. But a lot of the others they're now claiming are securities and therefore, you know, pay lots of money to the SEC.
That's capitalizing.
There's a big lawsuit going off at the present moment with regards to XRP on that one, on that front. So the SEC are power grabbing in a big way at the present moment. There's an awful lot of people think that they are no longer fit for purpose as a result, because they are overextending themselves well beyond their current remit. And frankly, this there is no Planet B business. That's what I would call mission creep. Be to the extreme. That is not what they are there for.
I've just spotted the incredibly little Schmitty line of drop right at the end here. While no outcome will satisfy all participants, it is essential that the decision-making process be viewed as legitimate both by the regulators and the regulated.
It's imperative that power is seen as legitimate by the ruler and the ruled.
And don't think that it's just the big corpos that are getting their carbon social credit score, because Doconomy and MasterCard sets global standard with carbon calculator.
We'll get to the ground. We're filtering down to the ground level now. Yes.
Yeah, I would go through more of this article, but it's frankly really badly laid out, so I'll grab another one. This is from Globe Trender. We were talking about it. Doconomy is the world's first credit card with a CO2 cap on spending. And there you go, your little card's got your the all-seeing eye of number 13 on the UN sustainable goals on climate action. They're literally staring at you. Oh, do they think we're fucking stupid?
No, they just don't realize. They don't think you can do anything about it, and they're probably like,
"Yep."
They don't mind rubbing it in your face at this point. It's fucking nightmarish. The here's the fucking crazy thing is that there is the likelihood is that a lot of these positions and maneuvers that they're doing with regards to carbon regulation, there is the very grave danger that they will cut carbon emissions so much that there won't be enough CO2 to sustain.
What they want to bring the dinosaurs back. That's why, because they're all fucking lizards.
But you need a lot more CO2 in the air to do that. You need a lot. If we keep on cutting CO2 in the atmosphere, we won't be able to sustain plant life. They will literally bring about the disaster they want by a lot of these measures if they go
to over the top. Farm in the world. Alex Jones feels a bit of a meme, but he's actually kind of right in that we historically have seen much bigger fluctuations. And I don't want to get into any kind of scientific debate, because this isn't at all about science. None of this is. But all of it is bunk. None of it makes any sense. None of it, even within its own framework, it all falls down. Yeah. And basically, anyone who is questions these agendas is a climate denier in the same way that they are labeled.
And it doesn't matter anyway, because it's not just weird Swedish folk that are doing it. NatWest now has a carbon tracker. Track your footprint with our new app.
An important thing we missed here is the economy isn't a Swedish fintech firm. It's actually just an arm of MasterCard.
I should have pointed that out more, that it's basically an arm of MasterCard, so they can develop this technology without actually being part of something they have to disclose as being developed themselves.
We went down a bit of a rabbit hole with this one. It's the next section we're going to get onto after this, because the UK has its own Doconomy equivalent, or in fact it has about 20, because instead of being led by MasterCard, the US has a big thing where they try and get these independent legislatory bodies in quotes, and large corporations to... No, we can talk about the NatWest thing first, but large corporations to adopt this. But we have here NatWest and a whole bunch of other banks. I know Lloyds and think Barclays have their own version of this, but basically this is the carbon, literally the carbon credit score. NatWest has it. It keeps bothering me in my banking app to set it up. It has the nudge unit would be proud. It has nudge notifications.
Oh God!
But what we have here is it literally the your carbon credit score, your carbon footprint, and it is a huge intrusion of financial data by a third party. You have to, by definition, track every single transaction the population makes in order to give them an accurate carbon credit score. So this gels very well. We'll get onto it again later with the central bank digital currency stuff.
Well,
you can't do this without something like a central bank.
That's what I was going to say. That you know, the sort of idea of a blockchain based social credit system or social credit sort of database, as we have discussed before, and I would hope people are familiar with, as we, because I think we've brought it up several times now, because frankly we see it everywhere. You can't avoid it. It, as you're saying, it is a prerequisite to develop these sort of disclosure systems, both on the level of, you know, corporate accounting software, and also on the level of the individual consumer.
I will not eat the pod. I will not live in the bug. And people are saying we must ride the bug.
Can we go for the links 12, 13, and 14 then?
No. We need to go over. Yes, we do need to go over 12, 13, and 14.
It's sort of the order we're putting them in. But no, this is one you looked into a good bit. Well, there seems to be some quite interesting stuff about this.
They'll be in reverse order, actually, I'm afraid.
Ah, right. Fair enough. That makes sense.
It'll be 14, 13, and 12. How aware of this are you, Trigger? Has your bank tried to bother you to give them your Carver credit score yet?
No, my bank may try, because, you know, I'm sure they will. In fact, I bank with NatWest, so we've already seen that they are working on a new app. But no, they can take a flying leap. I do not use a credit card. I still try to pay with cash largely where possible these days. Now we're outside of COVID and people are starting to accept cash again. I am spending cash. Exactly. I'm spending cash, and I'm spreading my germs around to people.
I do have the perfect excuse for every single homeless person that asks me for some change, though. I do just turn around and say to them, well, I'm sorry, mate, we live in a cashless society.
Ugh. That was kind of amazing when you did that.
I just do it all the time now. I think it's hilarious.
They're gonna whip out the little PayPal, the little card readers.
Yeah, they're gonna have the, like, homeless people are gonna have QR codes in their bloody foreheads, and you walk up and scan them.
Oh dear!
Got any Ethereum, mate? I need to get the bus home.
Yeah, you got any Bitcoin? Oh, no, they're gonna call it Bitcoin. They are, but here's just how emergent this whole thing is. No one was talking about this in 2018. It wasn't part of the conversation. People were still getting over, you know, watching crab in bucket videos and mm-hmm. like circle jerking still about, you know, getting the feminists out of video games. That was 2018, and they were talking about the midterms, but they weren't talking about their stuff. But this is where the roots lie, because where did this come from? Well, the Financial Conduct Authority, which is the UK equivalent of the SEC, really, ran in 2018 something called the Green FinTech Challenge. In October 2018, we launched the pilot Green FinTech Challenge to support innovation and growth in the green finance sector as part of the government's Green Great Britain Week. Oh no, the bonkers Britain stuff is back. The challenge was open to startups, incumbents, and technology providers that met our eligibility criteria of assisting in the transition to a greener economy, benefits UK markets as consumers, the need for innovate services. What a weird phrasing. The initiative offers support via the most appropriate avenue for the successful applicants. The regulatory sandbox, which basically means we tell you what to do. Direct support, which is money. The advice unit and bespoke green finance cohort engagement, which is also just money. Successful applicants, applications were closed in 2019. Applicants were asked to provide information, blah, blah, blah. Here's the people who won direct support. You have Barclays, who have an impact investing ecosystem platform, blah, 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 fund managers. They basically have the same thing, like a carbon credit score. Coenergy.app, a platform that automates the setup and management of share registry services for community energy projects. As far as I know, that doesn't exist. I looked that one up. Kogo, which is what we just talked about. Here we go. Here's Kogo. An app that connects consumers with businesses that align with their social and environmental values. So let's go to the next link then. Kogo and the Green FinTech.
Do you not want to mention one of these other?
Well, oh, no. We'll go
direct
back
support
to this.
Firm, a specific one called energy mine, which will come up later, a tokenized rewards platform which incentivizes consumers to adopt greener lifestyle changes.
How could that go wrong? Here we have Kogo, Green FinTech Challenge case study. Kogo helps users understand and offset their carbon footprint via an app. So they basically just go on to describe Kogo as the default provider of carbon credit scores in the UK. We provided Kogo with one of our regulatory tools, an informal steer. This set out the definition of an account information service as described in our handbook. Basically, what's happening here is the Financial Service Authority is setting out a very detailed brief for what they want. They're getting a third party to come in, carry out that brief, and then they're saying, look at all these independent green fintech firms who've sprouted out of the ground that we just so happen to have steered every single part of their creation and also financed.
Well, yeah, this is sort of an attempt made at, like, you know, scattergun shot and copious amounts of fecal matter against the wall in the hopes that Britain becomes the new, you know, Silicon Valley, but turn it green, you know, some nonsense like that. UK new fintech hub 2025. This will be all the crap we get as this stuff gets distributed from
this
managerial outlets directly out into the mainstream.
This is how the consent is manufactured, though. This is how the sausage gets made. Because if you go onto Kogo's website, their little first spiel is carbon footprint management products that enable individuals and businesses to measure, reduce, and offset their impact on the climate. And everyone
Take
just got, oh, well.
No.
Yeah, everyone will say, oh, well, it's purely voluntary. You know, these people are just putting their money where their mouth is and trying to save the planet. But as we've seen, it isn't. This is now a regulatory requirement. So the government, the Financial Conduct Authority, has gone to these businesses and said, create these tools. Mm. The government has then gone, look at all these green finance firms. The public must want tools for corporations to disclose their climate impact and social impact.
And
then they've gone.
And at the same time, this ESG framework is being pushed upon, you know, the big four accountancy firms have taken it on, so everyone underneath them will need to take it on. And as we've seen,
it's a bit of a moot point, because once it becomes legislatory, then it doesn't really matter which corporate interests are pushing.
It's more the fact that all of a sudden there's this pre-developed solution that came out of nowhere that, you know, someone who's probably like the nephew of someone at the Tory party is going to make a cool £500 million on selling.
This is coming into law now, but the tools to implement it were made 4 years ago, back when the justification for it didn't yet exist. So we now see how the sausage gets made. There is an undeniable completely top-down aspect to this. And we can see that when they talk about the demand from consumers, that is purely manufactured by them, funded by them, and the brief is set out by them.
Yeah, there you go. At Kogo, we know that measuring carbon footprints is only half of the challenge. Consumers and businesses need personalized, relevant nudges to help them take action on reducing their carbon emissions. It's essentially all an admittance that this whole system is top-down. That's why they developed a system for the banks, that the banks they will then use to impose upon you through your Doconomy credit card or your NatWest carbon cap on your debit spending account or your savings account or whatever it is. You know,
I love that phrase. Measuring carbon footprints is only half the challenge. Consumers and businesses need personalized, relevant nudges to help them take action. It's nudge unit language.
Mm-hmm.
So we've speed talked for a bit here, Trig. What's your takeaway?
Those nudges are not going to be polite. Oh, you know, you should think about doing that. It is going to be do this or else. You know, we will garnish your wages, take capital straight out of your bank, etc.
The line here: we are privileged to be working with 7 of the world's leading banks. Is there more than 7 of the world's leading banks? I thought there was about 7 big investment banks, and that was it. Which basically means we are working with all the banks in the world.
Oh,
in that West.
I don't know. You You can get out. You can get over to China and Japan and find some different
ones. HSBC's already on ESG score stuff. So
yeah,
yeah. What is it? The ones that aren't on here have developed their own systems that are identical to this, or they use something like Deconomy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, see, this is just the stuff for the corporate entity itself. This isn't the stuff that then gets distributed to the consumer small business level, which is as we were about to get into the other things, that these energy tokens, the more consumer focused aspects.
Let's not scroll by what you just scrolled by so quickly. There is a classic line on there. Just above where it says contact us is once again the classic be on the right side.
Yeah.
we've decided what history is going to read.
Where's the little picture of Hegel? Where is he?
Yeah.
How nice of them. They've already listed the carbon footprint for 2021, 2022. Certified B corporation, why not certified A? Good enough.
There's loads of stuff we have to cover yet, but yeah, let's take we can jump around a bit during the more open discussion, but let's take a quick look back at the Green FinTech Challenge, because you talked about Energy Mine, which is what turned out to be a crypto scam, like a straight up crypto scam.
Let me open all these links first so I can put them up.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Because you just go down this rabbit hole. I know we kind of did it at the same time, but you get all this stuff where you find that these publicly invested entities are headed by the worst people. But to round out this section, we went over Kogo. They have the ear of the big banks, but they were ostensibly set up and funded by the British government. They are they are a governmental arm, Kogo. They are a product of the Financial Conduct Authority.
FCA. That one.
Yeah, it's the green fintech startup.
There we go.
I imagine they don't have a case study on. On Energy Mine, it seems to have been largely removed from the FCA's website, and we will begin to see why. Energy Token. The idea of Energy Token is that it is a green solution by which you will be incentivized to undergo more green action by being given these tokens.
Thumbnail up for a second. I'll move all these links.
Sure.
Just so I'm not flashing them up on screen time and time again.
That's fine. What it aims to do is it aims to be a weird esoteric blockchain solution to coming up with a way of developing a crypto that will manipulate you and reward you into doing the good thing and not doing the bad thing.
Mm.
That is what this energy token is. It gets into the green crypto. This is very standard. There's so many of these trying to get government attention. And as we keep banging on about, if crypto truly was disruptive, why do governments keep pumping money into it and also guaranteeing it?
Why would their corporate embedded video be unavailable? Oh no.
Oh no, what's happened here? Well, let's go over what their mission is.
Be part of the change.
Yes. Get rewarded for saving energy.
Yeah.
Energy token incentivizes consumers for energy saving and green, in quotes, behaviors. Even they don't seem to believe it. Simply take part in a range of different energy efficient activities, whether it be in the workplace, switching to low carbon transport, or purchasing energy efficient electric appliances, and you'll be rewarded with ETK. The solution, Energy Token Rewards Energy Saving Behavior. Our blockchain solution will create a platform to reward energy efficient behavior through Energy Token. Again, this is a government set up entity. Mm-hmm. They got, by the FCA's own website, they got direct support and direct regulatory support.
Be part of the change. Energy Token Rewards Energy Saving Behavior. Our blockchain solution will create a platform to reward energy efficient behavior.
Oh dear, be part of the change.
Here's the roadmap. I hope all these things really happened.
if you look at the roadmap, it says phase 4, mobile apps. And then phase 5 just says 2019. Phase 5 to 8 is missing.
Oh, see, look at all these people you would really trust as well, especially this man over here with a jihadi beard.
Well, this is what took us down the rabbit hole. He is a worked example of how these quasi-governmental schemes end in ruin for people. Mm. Let me introduce you to Omar Rahim, the CEO of Energy Token. After spending the last 12 years in the energy sector trading gas and power through Europe, Omar created Energy Mine, a tech company working to revolutionize the energy.
Which one have you got opened here? Is this his profile on the site?
I'm just reading his profile on the site, yes.
Sorry, I went on his Twitter.
if we go on over to his Twitter, there's nay a mention of Energy Token.
Well, because he's doing matcha capital these days. This is the thing about venture capitalism. You've got to be so adventurous that you lose your previous capital ventures in the process.
Oh yeah.
This is Omar Rahim. He's originally, I think, from Qatar. Sorry, he's
the UAE or something like that. Who knows?
Oh, the UAE. Yeah.
I know the ex-member working at Binance.
When did that happen? Well, it seems that between the failure of Energy Token and the founding of his matcha capital, he was a partner at Binance.
Well, see, this is one tweet I grabbed just because I thought it was funny. Whereas, like, Bitcoin Magazine, the MicroStrategy CEO guy, be like, Bitcoin is the American dream. And this guy's like, Bitcoin is literally the opposite of the American dream. Bitcoin is liberation from exploitative capitalism. I don't think he gets it. This is basically like it's like your Fabian group in the 20s, and this dude's saying the quiet part out loud. Meanwhile, we've got like Orwell over here is just telling us.
Yes, we see him here talking about Binance.
Oh, here, yeah, the future blockchain summit in Dubai. You know, he's here with people who are editor in chief of Cointelegraph, CEO, co-founder and chairman of Coinmina, district MENA at Binance, head of communications at some other big firm. It's all very interesting. And then we get to is this not some other part of his thing too? Is this Earth 2 or whatever it is?
The thing is, Omar Rahim is a man with a finger in many, many pies. Mm. He was partnered with Binance and then seemingly got rid of. He scammed the people, as we'll get to later, with Energy Token. He accepted large amounts of money from the UK government in the process. But he is also involved in the setting up of the metaverse. Binance, through Omar Rahim, the scam artist, invested partially and put him on the team of this Earth 2 project, which is a giant
that's
weird
interesting
scam.
That you mentioned metaverse here, though, because there is, what's his face, Changpeng Zhao,
yes,
the Chinese CEO and founder of Binance, which if you read some of the stuff in here, it's kind of just like really funny, because it's like, you know, in 2014 he sold his Shanghai apartment for about $1 million and used this money to buy Bitcoin. He launched Binance in 2017 and raised $15 million. And then in February 2018, he was estimated to have been worth £1 billion. So what? He just in the space of a year, he, you know, increased his stack by like, what? Like two digits there. He's all of a sudden a billionaire. And then he also happens to be someone who invested $500 million through Binance to finance the acquisition of Twitter by Elon Musk. Now, is there any possibility here that, as I have said, and I'm going to continue to say, that it is likely the buyout of Twitter is some sort of weird ploy to further cement metaverse's market superiority, that there's probably some weird stuff going on there? But I don't know, it's just like there is no context sometimes to these people's stories. You know, he is just some Chinese Canadian guy that set up a Bitcoin trading platform, and now he's worth $1 billion and he's throwing money at projects left,
it's
right,
the
and
same.
Center. And he's
if
working
we go
with...
to the tweet by Mark Mac there, yeah, the he's tweeting at Mr. Omar Rahim, again, a recipient of the Financial Conduct Authority's Green Initiative kind of competition. He directly received taxpayer money to set up this scheme as an explicit green crypto scheme. He says, "Do you have any response to Hotep Crypto?" Sorry, that's funny. Crypto's announcement. A lot of people invested in Engie Token and need answers to where the $15 million US dollars has gone.
Oh, sorry, I forgot to make a joke earlier on. Earth 2? Damn, I suppose Earth really was that good.
Does Engie Mine know about this failure? You can't just report everyone to Twitter who raised questions. Basically, he was reporting everyone who put it up.
Yeah, so this
guy's
like,
was...
I have an announcement to make about Energy Mine regarding blah, 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 and Omar. This project's paused on hold. The reason why they are out of money. How do I know this? My partner was part of a group. They pitched this to the summer for funding. How did they run out of money? I can only speculate, but most likely they kept too much of it in Ethereum, and we know Ethereum tanked after the ICO hype. They also did spend some on development, for sure, and had big dreams. Why is Omar not communicating this to his followers? I believe he's trying to keep a very low profile because Energy Mine is a legitimate company operating in the UK. Rules are fuzzy around raising for an ICO in the UK. Where is the initial money raised? It's all gone. Why am I posting this? Because ICO investors have reached out to me with their concerns. I viewed their Telegram chat and it's radio silence. Omar owes it to his investors to be honest.
Why we're raising this again, this is a UK company based in Oldham and Manchester, actually, that was invested in by the Financial Conduct Authority under the auspices of Green Capital, and it has been used by some internationalist from the UAE called Omar Rahim to scam people out of £15 million.
And you can be damn sure this isn't the only one.
No.
I reckon if you went looking for these, there is probably dozens and dozens that have been scrubbed.
There's a web with Binance and Earth too, and this is where all this money is coming from. This is what all these people are doing. None of this is emergent behavior. They are all in bed with governments to create these social nudge crypto projects and things like the Metaverse and Earth 2 to put you in the pod.
Energy Mine raises another £4 million. This is one from 2018. Based in Oldham has raised the remaining 4 million of its 12 million initial coin offering, having raised 8 million during the pre-sale period, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, there's not really too much mentioned. Yeah.
No, there is.
Energy Mine has also announced that it's opening offices in Japan, the United States, South Korea, and Germany.
This is just a good case study, because if you go to Energy Mines Limited's corporate listing, it is in liquidation. The company is currently in receivership, what Americans would refer to as Chapter 11. Their confirmations, their taxes are overdue, basically.
Do you reckon this is even a property they own? Do you reckon if you went to like, does 683 to 693 Wilmslow Road, Didsbury, even exist?
I've checked it does, but I think it's a residential property.
1, 2, 3, 4, Fake Street.
It is currently a Costa Coffee.
Seems about the right place for somewhere that has to be run out of, though. This is nothing new. When all of like the early, you know, both in Britain and in the UK, or sorry, Britain and the UK, Britain and the US. When they first started massively subsidizing the development of wind turbines, solar panels, the amount of money that, especially in Obama's government and all his friends, every single one of them is now an eco fintech pioneer that's all worth $150 million because they basically extorted money out of the government to not develop some kind of new wind turbine or some kind of solar panel or some type
I'm
of
sure
wind turbine or sorry, water
you
turbine.
You saw some of that as well, Trig.
Mm.
Oh, all sorts of stuff. Yes, I don't know how to put it. It is kind of nightmarish. The amount of, I mean, that's going back to the fact that this is coming out of a Costa's Coffee. So much stuff in London. So many businesses are just non-existent, are trading out of nowhere, don't exist. The amount of scams, the amount of scams that seem to sort of originate in the Middle East by somebody that then disappears into the Middle East and you never see it again.
This didn't originate in the Middle East. This was financed by the Financial Conduct Authority, don't you know?
I know, but the Financial Conduct Authority is not going to be the one scamming. It's the guy.
No.
It's the guy doing the scamming. He's just conned them too. It's so common. We have not fit for purpose governmental organizations that have huge amounts of money and power and no way of actually controlling what they do.
It seems that Omar Rahim is one of these kind of weird international Brahmin class people who never gets his debts called in, and who always has a golden parachute to whatever gay globalist project is currently going on. Mm-hmm. And these are the people that they use to, like, one, stuff each other's pockets, and to defraud you know, the taxpayer of your money, because this project got taxpayer money, which is insane. But it's we wanted to give you a ground level worked example of how the sausage gets made. Some of these succeed, most of them don't. And the ones that succeed whilst being heavily subsidized are what they use as an example of the bottom up consumer demand for this capital. All these ESGs and things are justified by initiatives like Kogo, like Energy Token, like Doconomy, all of these things. They talk about market demand and then they use that as justification for regulation. And all of it is completely fake. There is no quote unquote green finance revolution going on in the public sphere. People don't care. They just want to make money.
It's not just they don't care. I don't think they actively don't want it. But don't say anything because they are sat there thinking, am I the only one? It is another classic case of the silent majority. You ask how many people do you need to ask about what's her face, the nutcase Swedish chick that was, you know, telling everyone how dare you.
Greta Thunberg.
Yeah, Greta Thunberg.
Oh no, not the Thunberg.
Everybody thought she was ridiculous, yeah? But nobody wanted to speak up and say it out loud. And you'd mention it, you know, in private corners where you knew you were unlike mind. But you know, you go down to the shop, you go down to the pub and you mention it, and someone will sidle up to you and go, oh, I know what you mean. And then suddenly more will, and more, and more. And before you know it, everyone who had sat there been going, oh, yes, absolutely, I'm completely in support of this, you know, openly 5-10 minutes beforehand, they're all actually suddenly realized that actually they're all talking shit to each other and giving out the wrong signals, and they're not being true to themselves. They're not thinking for themselves. They're doing what they're told because they're terrified of a backlash. It's not going to happen from the public. That backlash will happen from the press. It's going to happen from 10 or 15, you know, wankers from the BBC, and that's it. And they're never going to find out me, you know, in a pub in the Midlands somewhere.
The problem is that the backlash will come in the form of their reduced, you know, social credit score.
Mm. Yeah, well, now yes, now they, once it's digitalized, that's it. You're done.
What's being celebrated here really is something that has essentially already happened. Is the problem?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying earlier on. You know, we have all these differing components of these systems, and essentially it's all just been wrapped up together and formalized in one piece. And then because of that, we now, you know, we are now told that this new thing has arrived, and actually it was there all along. You know, it is always that way.
Coronal mass ejection can't come soon enough, and that won't do it either, because you're not going to get all of the data centers.
Like I said, the competition was run in 2018. This has been going on for a lot longer than most people would realize.
I know.
I think you've got it up there, but one of the final things we should talk about is this, let's say, the corporate culture of MasterCard's economy, because they are leading the way. They are leading by example, and they are. Doconomy is the world's first company to publicly share individual carbon footprints of their employees as an educational effort. Imagine being told that, like, by the way, if you still want to work here, all of your financial transactions must be essentially public.
This is David D's level shit. Like, this is actually spot on the kind of thing he was talking about. And I actually saw someone throw this sort of notion out the other day, and it's obvious because it's what we're talking about. But, you know, not only is terrorism an excuse to fund and expand the security state, so is the economic crisis. Mm-hmm. So is racism. So is anti-racism. You know, like, everything is a reason to fund a social credit system. and all just comes into one big kind of thing. It's almost, you know, it's one of those things that if it wasn't for the fact that, I don't even know how to describe it. It just, it's like you couldn't write it. You know, if someone told you all of these things culminated into the one solution and that you were told day in, day out that that solution was going to be implemented and it had already been implemented anyway, you'd think you were mad.
It's once again, it's open book accounting. But whereas open book accounting was supposed to be, you know, company A works with company B to sell them products and services, and company B buys those products and services and they both agree on, you know, on everything else. That's great on an even platform. But where it's open book accounting, you will make your entire life transparent to us, or we will take your money from you. We'll take away your ability to own capital, own property. That is not without wanting to go into sort of power dynamics, we are drastically on the weak side of that power dynamic.
Mm. No, just the term education here, they must mean it in the Maoist sense. Calculating your individual private carbon footprint is a great way to kickstart your own education around carbon emissions and which activities in your life that contribute most to heating our planet. Our aim has been to create a tool where many can easily relate the activities to their everyday life and discover where they can make changes that will lower their footprint. They're going to fucking add a fine on this for all the mouth breathing folk that put extra, water vapour into the air, because they're the cunts making the fucking air hot. Not CO2.
Yeah, I know, it's H2O.
But no, this isn't, if there's no mouth breathing tariff, then this system isn't fair.
Well, you've got here, it is the equivalent, if you scroll down to that little iPad thing there, I'm trying to get the image on its own, but it's this guy.
Everyone looks very fake on this site, it is quite funny.
I'll put it in the section.
Opened it as a separate image.
Open it in a new tab, the image. But it's just, this is, you described it very well as it's a struggle session. It's an environmental struggle session. And here he is with his, 2463 tons of CO2, down 13%. My impact commitment.
His reduction goal.
I will reduce my impact for next year by cutting down on unnecessary and non-sustainable transport. A reduction goal, 20%. Like, what are you just like getting on a plane to like kill some penguins for fun? Like, most people don't undergo what they consider unnecessary transport.
Yeah, I was going to say, that James Murray person in chat is entirely right, and it's not just this dude. Look at these two here. I'm going to zoom in. Do these not look like AI-generated, like, comp images off of, like, LinkedIn profiles or something? These three people here.
I refuse to believe those are real people. Those are not real people. Like, I refuse to believe it. I'm actually starting to, with the AI stuff and everything, starting to buy into some of the empty internet theory stuff.
None of that, some of this shit is completely, like, fake people behind. I felt about that, like, with a lot of the rewilding stuff we looked at. I went deep into some of those websites and looked at all those people who were part of the top board or the organizer. Some of them exist. Some of them are just LinkedIn profiles with no data.
Yeah. By the way, James Murray's right as well. They're going to try and push people not to have children with this.
Oh, well, do you not already see like the metaverse, replacement for children and stuff that they're going to have? Why having children will be a thing of the past, and why 2050 we'll be able to have digital child experiences that'll be just as great as terrible. Yeah, and then there's also this thing that I came across sort of inadvertently, but ties very nicely to what we've been talking about. What is HMRC's Connect computer system, and how can it help with tax compliance?
Before we move on to Trigg, do you have anything to say about the pod people struggle section?
Yes, I'm glad I'm old and will probably be dead before I have to actually go through too much of it. But good God, it's horrifying. It really is absolutely fucking horrifying. I know I was talking to you a little while ago I've been seriously considering literally just selling up and buying a chunk of historic forest and setting up a log cabin within that.
Getting for him. No, the government will make you rewild it. They'll come down and knock your house down and say, the Skrulls live here now.
Yeah. Don't you know there's a very rare type of newt lives in this tree, and there's only three of them left?
I'll tell you what, if you do it right, you can do it. And the thing is, at that point, you can turn around and go, my life, actually, I contribute, you know, a negative tax, a negative carbon. Give me money.
Think of the sticklebacks, Trig. Think of the sticklebacks.
Unfortunately, like, disappearing off into a cabin in the woods, or especially having counter-societal opinions, let's say, generally leads you to end up getting Randy Weavered.
Yes, I know. And if I'm in a log cabin in the woods with just me and a typewriter and, you know, bits of piping and other materials, it could work out bad. You can get log cabins that meet building standards, though, James. I'm looking into it at the moment. The big
Uncle Trig.
the big problem you've got is that it depends on, you know, basically there's a mismatch between farming regulations and wildlife regulations and so on. And if you can find the middle ground there, especially if you're near a river, you can get away with it quite nicely. But it is tricky to do, but it would be nice, because I'll tell you what, at that point you're talking essentially 8-12 acres of woodlands, you know, 40 to 50 grand for a and then another, that again for a log cabin, and you're talking 4-bedroom house in woodlands for about 120 grand total. Which is madness. But there are lots and lots of hoops to jump through.
I'm sure you're not. Yeah, I'm sure they'll probably just come over and say no, stop it.
No, I've been looking into it. There are a lot of hoops to jump through, and you have to find the right woods, and obviously you have to find the one that doesn't have the rare finch in it or something.
No woods for they'll find like half a newt, and your house will have to come down. That's always the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the guy who got into a massive planning dispute and shot a councillor?
James, I know about septic tanks. My family was in the building industry for a very, very long period of time. I do know what I'm talking about.
Are you talking about Albert Dryden by any chance?
Yes.
The old guy who just wanted to blow stuff up in his own land.
Yes, yeah. I'm thinking about him.
Anyway, but I would rather like to get into this, because I don't know if you've read through this or not, but some like really, I don't know, just revealing and strange language about. There's this fusion consulting group who seem to have either helped or are describing this Kinect computer system, the HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, for those who don't know. Throughout 2020, we've seen a stark rise in the number of tax inquiries our clients are receiving from HMRC. This is in the main part because of the intelligence of their core system called Kinect. Introduced in 2010 and having cost in the region of $100 million to develop, the CCS is a sophisticated computer software and the key data analysing tool used by HMRC in its effort to reduce the tax gap. Having recovered...
It's referred to in media as the snooper computer.
Yeah.
Because it's a supercomputer that literally just eats all your data and spits out what they would consider irregularities.
Yeah, they go on to call it, the CCS is split into two distinct parts, analytical compliance environment and integrated compliance environment. ACE is an analytical environment that allows a small number of specialist analysts to manipulate, analyse, and profile data. Tax credit data is placed into ACE environment to match live claims against HMRC and third-party data, enabling identification of undeclared partners, directors, foster carers, landlords, claimants living abroad, and those with private bank accounts, including potential undeclared wealth. Whereas ISCE is a visualization tool that presents linked data shown pictorially on screen with the results used to enable further targeted risk assessment ran by around 3,000 staff members across HMRC. ISCE allows users to identify organized attacks. What? Who's organized attacks against HMRC? Why do I not know about this?
No, they mean organized attacks, as in like identity theft, stuff like that.
I'm sure. So they're just keeping our data safe for us, are they?
Basically, yes.
But it's just like the, you know, they go on here to talk about other stuff, and then there's just the list of all the stuff they would use. You know, like just a brief example of, you know, the snooper computer, the CCS helps HMRC gather information from banks, peer-to-peer lenders, and even platforms like social media accounts to build an accurate picture of an individual's spending. It also has the power to access land registry records, see whether any properties have been purchased, and determine whether a taxpayer is likely to be able to afford such properties. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Those would be those land registry records, or records that were forcibly digitized by the government so that you can't have a paper deed for your home anymore.
No, you know, I didn't get a paper deed.
But, you know, tax returns, bank accounts and pensions, online social networking, credit reference agencies, Amazon, where you buy stuff, credit and debit card. You know, what they're describing here, again, is this idea of a personal financial credit score. And it shows that, you know, they've been thinking about a framework like this since 2010, and they've been using it. And it is only now that through things at the World Economic Forum and, you know, the FCA and these other think tanks, that we are just being fed the notion that this stuff exists, even though it's been operating on us for, you know, over a decade.
Google Street View, good lord. Property. Yeah, it's the fact that they talk about eBay, your shopping, your social
your
media.
Your DVLA records, your council tax.
Mm-hmm. Basically, HMRC has a massive file on every financial interaction that you make, mm-hmm. and this will be the computer that is used to calculate your carbon credit score, and be used to calculate all kinds of things about what you will and won't be allowed to do in future, because it already calculates what you are and aren't allowed to buy without the government coming and going, we don't think you can afford that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's now law that says, show us how you can afford that house, and in the meantime, we'll take it away. You can't have an off the books business. You can't have a cash business. You really can't deal with cash on a large scale anymore, because you'll end up getting completely fucked by something. Even if you are legitimate, you'll get completely fucked by something like this. They're forcing you to engage in this system, otherwise you will be completely locked out of any kind of financial transaction. Again, this existed since 2010, but it has been scaled up, I imagine, quite heavily. And this is the teeth. This is the cudgel. This is, you know, the sharp end of what happens. And people who don't think this will happen to them and think we are conspiratorial come across things like this, and I think it shatters their world because they didn't realize that, oh no, the government is actually spying on me. But it's okay. It's to make sure I'm paying my tax. Like, well, if they have that information can be used for other purposes without warrant, by the way. With, you know, the Snoopers Charter and all that, they don't need a warrant to get this. This information already exists in the government ecosystem, so they can just access it. This can just be accessed at any time because it's seen as public information. Because you know, your Amazon and eBay purchases are public information.
Yeah,
apparently.
And your Facebook profiles, your ghost profile on Facebook, even if you don't have a profile on Facebook, your friends and family do, and they've created a ghost profile for you as a result.
If you were completely offline and your auntie Jean goes, my nephew just bought a Ferrari, you'll have HMRC rapping on. That could be kind of funny, actually. Someone could create a whole bunch of like fake stuff and then get someone investigated for purchases they haven't made. That there's like vectors of attack built into this. And HMRC, by the way, can just turn your life upside down and take all your money. And say, we don't, you know, prove where you got this money from without legal help.
It's a bit like,
lol, you can't pay for lawyers.
It's a bit
anymore.
Like America. The most scariest alphabet agency is the IRS.
Yes.
Basically the same here.
Yep.
I think that's everything covered, though. I don't know. Do you guys have any rounding out thoughts?
Yeah, fuck it. I'm off to Honduras.
Yeah, let's just go to Belize and we'll just buy a submarine or something. Cause
I literally was watching something earlier today about somebody who had left their business in London, taken all of their money out and spent 50 grand buying a huge amount of land in Colombia, and then just built a freaking, basically a mansion on the side of this hill, overlooking huge amounts of beautiful, lush coca and you know, avocado farms.
Yeah, but he was growing tobacco and mint leaves.
Yeah, and yeah, just going, I'm taking my half a million cigarettes. Or whatever. Yeah. Just taking their, I think they've got about half a million after working in the city for God knows how long. And yeah, just retired out there in their 30s, just gone, sod it, I've got enough money to live like a king in Colombia.
Until you get murdered by the local Juarez cartel or something.
Yeah, maybe. Pay him.
Let's
the
just
dues.
All liquidate our assets and buy like half of Sierra Leone or something.
Well, no, see, I've always thought if we just buy some valley in Wales somewhere, just like bumfuck nowhere, and we just wait and we build.
We just leans in ominously. What do, Evelyn? Build. Well, I think that's everything we've covered. I'm not sure we have much to shill. What I will do is I'll do the normal stuff in that we've had a donation, which I want to read.
I was going
to
say, let us not forget Epic Ninja's donation.
Yes, here. Epic Ninja said, the guy who got done for having the Anarchist Cookbook but got let off was just given 2 years in January. Even lawyers can't say the laws are dumb anymore. Yeah. Yeah, he got let off, but they did basically decide to lol, you're going to prison anyway. Because he had, you know, the boilerplate, like he might as well have had like a Limp Bizkit record. It's like it's edgy teenager's first edgy book.
Yeah.
But that can land you in prison because Britain. Jeez. Apart from that, we do have the Telegram still.
Yep.
That is still a thing. I'll put the link in the chat here.
That is where you can find us nowadays. I think we're starting to get to grips with it a little bit as well.
Yeah, we are.
It's nice that you aren't limited to the style of posting that you are on Twitter. And I'm going to refrain from posting. I might even just get it up because it's funny and I keep laughing at it if I can find it.
That is Trigg's YouTube channel. He's currently playing a D&D campaign, I believe.
I'm starting a new D&D campaign as well now. I've got a new group. And I'm a guest again tomorrow on that Crime Guys channel.
Cool.
We are
you
discussing.
Won't stop chilling in my Discord server. for our writing,
oh, wait,
if you guys are interested,
can I not open
we do
that
have
as a
the.
Link? That's... Oh, there we go.
We do have the Antipod Substack. So
probably really loud.
You've had your Canton and Class War come out there recently.
Mm.
So we do write. I've got like three different pieces in the works that are going to be quite long. But hopefully, yeah, there's one that I've had some good discussions about, which I'm trying to make, called Political Non-Combatants, which should be interested, which is basically not turning Schmidt on its head, but using him as a framework to, like, be nicer to people, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I think we will probably have a stream for Thursday. I don't have any ideas for Monday yet, and I would rather not rush something out. However, I was thinking we could maybe say between like 8:30 or between say 8 and 9:30 on Monday, basically kind of do like a bit of a Q&A thing and allow people to, you know, people who have gone through the backlog of some of the stuff we've done, say, since the start of the year. And if they have any questions or further sort of things on stuff, we can maybe kind of do a Q&A kind of thing.
I will
thing.
Solicit some in the Discord and the Telegram, and we can also do a bit of a news roundup as well in between questions. So we might have more of a general kind of interaction, low key, bit of news, bit of questions, kind of a chill stream on Monday, which sounds like fun. I'd definitely be up for that. I think that's all we've got to show, though. Apart from that, we are trying to get better at handing off to people who are currently streaming.
Yes.
So in that spirit, Radlib, there's a bit of an overlap, but we actually might start streaming a little bit earlier on Thursdays because it suits me a bit better because I don't I'm an old man, I like going to bed early on a school night. But Radlib is currently streaming. If you want to go raid him, I'll put his video in the chat there.
Make sure to remind him who sent you.
Yes. Do put Scrump Raid in the chat. We will be going over there, and if you want to watch his stream, he's currently streaming about Against Equality, which should be nice and spicy. But yeah, this we've hopefully shown you a top level and low level of how the green capital financial sausage gets made. Like you said, next Thursday we don't have a topic, but we'll figure something out, and Monday we're doing a bit of a Q&A stream. Thank you again to Trig for returning as our he's still a perennial guest, guys. Don't worry, Trig's not left. Trig's still here.
I am still here. I just lot on my plate at the moment is all. Actually, you know what? I'm going to show hard on my D&D that I'm starting. I think it should be Sunday because we're doing it on 1776 America. The actual party are going to find themselves as slaves. I'm going to be playing with fiat currency. I'm going to be playing with the idea of company script and all sorts of stuff like that. And we have an organization in there called the Western Enslavement Fund, who is dead set on making sure that everyone is enslaved. No one will earn anything, and they will all be happy.
I could provide you some very good like Carlyle quotes to read out as you subject them to this kind of stuff.
It is going to be brutal. I intend to kill a couple of the party off quite brutally in interesting ways. They'll be lucky if they survive.
Is that kind of campaign?
It is. I've got Uzlu to join us and a few others. I've got Coat Rack in there and some old friends. So it should be kind of spicy and kind of fun. But yes.
I think we've shilled everything from you, Evelyn.
I will say goodbye from me.
Yes, I will say goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me too. Right.
Thank you guys, and do remember to go and raid Radlib.
Bye.
See ya.
Take care.
There we go. Stream's done.